Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 22, and I am Libya, your host, and this week we have two returning guests.
This is Allison from Los Angeles.
And I'm Rebecca, also from Los Angeles.
Yay! And we are actually doing the podcast in person, which is sometimes a bit rare. So enjoy it while you have it. And this week I have two pieces of news. The first is I'm going to have to eat my words a little bit. It's about Torchwood. And I think a couple weeks ago, I said that the release about the Torchwood info was totally wrong. Apparently, at least was partially right. So there you go.
Well, that makes it partially wrong. So you were partially right.
So anyway, the first thing that we just found out is Torchwood season 4 will be called A New World. And it centers around, of course, our team, Jack Harkness and Gwen. I just like totally blanked on her name for a second.
Yeah, what's her name?
And
the Welsh chick.
Right. CIA agent Rex and tech person Esther are apparently on the run for whatever reason, and they need some help, and they go looking for the legends of Torchwood. And they track down Jack and Gwen, because Torchwood has been disbanded, but apparently now they're legend, I put in parentheses. And they have to go fight whatever it is that they're fighting for 10 episodes. We still don't really know exactly what that is, but they said it's going to be a self-contained story, like Children of Earth, beginning and end. You just need to watch that season. So, you know, I'm getting a little excited, ready to go. Allison said something about, the writers.
Oh, the writers are going to be, there's an enormous number of American writers on staff. Apparently, this for the 10 episodes that this is going to run, they've got something like 6 American writers, one of whom is Jane Espenson.
Yay, Jane!
Yay! So I'm excited about it, definitely. And also, another one of the writers, and I'm blanking on his name, is one of the writers for Supernatural, too, and he did X-Files also. And so it's definitely a quality bunch.
Excellent. I am glad to hear that. The other piece of news I have is James Purfoy from Rome fame, and also he had a short-lived show called The Philanthropist?
Philanthropist, right.
Thank you, I can say that. Now he just joins the cast of the Starz production of Camelot, and he's playing King Lot, who I actually don't know who that is in the Camelot story at all.
And Queen Camel, I guess, would be yeah. The other part of that.
I'm like, what? But I love James Purfoy, so whatever, I'll take him. And anyone else have any news?
I actually, just this past week, I think Thursday, we found out that the Lost DVDs are going to have an epilogue, like a 12-minute, just about 12 minutes scene that's going to tie up some more loose ends, I guess, things that people complained about that didn't get answered. And you can find clips of it online. Someone did actually leak it. It is the internet, so it's out there somewhere. It's Googleable.
But, Googleable?
Yes, it's Googleable.
That's a word. That's a word
it
now.
It is a word. Right. I said it is.
Okay, then. All right, so I want to get started because this week we have a lot of shows. So the first show, let's just take off with True Blood. This week's episode was pretty fantastic. I've actually been really impressed with the last couple of episodes of True Blood. Mainly because they've been focusing more on Suki's powers and what they are and where they come from. And because I know the answer to that, I'm getting more excited. I was like, they're almost there. They're getting so close to the answer. This is awesome. So we did the big breakout of Bill. The only thing is, I swear, like the first 2 minutes into True Blood, my first, before the credits, you know, it's the little tease. As a tease, as the credits were coming on, I'm yelling at the screen, Suki, you are an idiot. Because it literally, they're running away, escaping from the house, running from the shapeshifter. She finds Bill, and she sees that he's hurt, and her first thing she does is scream for help. Like, the only people around her are people who want to capture her again. Why are you screaming for
vampires
help?
Vampires and werewolves. That's not very helpful.
And
really,
the people around her are the ones that hurt Bill in the first place. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, who the heck are you screaming for? Shut up. So I literally was screaming at the screen, and I was like, she's...
Yeah, yeah. Frequently, Sookie has that effect on people.
Oh,
really.
My God, she is too dumb to live. But after she gets past that part, and they did the whole whatever, and Bill gets away, and then he feasts on her like a summer dinner, or Sunday dinner, which I actually was laughing at. I was like, oh, let's take a starving vampire who's been drained and stick him in a closed environment with the one person who has blood. That's not going to end badly.
Not at all. Not at all.
So, I mean, but the people who haven't read the book, have either one of you read the book?
I haven't read it, but I know from other people who have pretty much what to expect. So I know what's going on with Sookie.
Okay, well, then
I'm just waiting for them to get there.
I won't ask you this, so I'm going to ask you this, Rebecca. Based on the episode that you've seen so far.
I actually haven't seen this season because I don't have special cable channels and I don't have them downloaded. So.
Oh, sad.
That's what BitTorrent is for.
Yeah. Shh. Well, I was just because I wanted to basically know what someone who didn't read the books thought of the whole dream sequence because... There's Suki's in a coma, and she's, like, having this kind of vision,
mm-hmm.
and you obviously know it's not just a dream. It obviously means something, and you already know the answer, so I can't ask
you.
Yeah,
that's the thing. I mean, once I saw it, even though I have not read it, I knew kind of what to expect, and so that scene, I said, oh, that must be.
Right.
And because I had that. But I don't know what you'd think of it if you really were coming into it completely virginal.
Right. And that's what I kind of wanted to know because I know what it means because I was like, oh, this is the thing that does the thing. So I'm trying to be vague. I'm trying not to give spoilers, but it's very exciting. And I can't wait for... There's another... The character that we got introduced to in the dream sequence was Claudine.
Mm-hmm.
I love Claudine. So, I'm like, they finally got to Claudine. Because in the books, Claudine's actually, like, in the first book.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know who she is. She's, like, this person kind of on the side that kind of hangs around Sookie and is, like, and is usually mysteriously there to help her when she gets in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And then she just kind of disappears. And you don't find out till later who the heck Claudine is. And you're like, oh... And so this time, we're in season 3, and they finally have introduced Claudine, but in a dream, so it's kind of weird. I'm like...
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to relegate her appearances just to the sort of other plane, just sort of a dream world, or whether she's going to enter into actually interacting with her
I hope she
does in the book.
Right, because she's basically, you know, in the book, she's kind of... Suki's like guardian, well, not like a real guardian angel, mm. but like she just kind of looks out for Sookie.
Right.
And that would be very useful. Sookie gets in a lot of trouble, and apparently these vampires are pretty unpredictable and not necessarily helpful all the time. They keep changing their allegiances. It would be nice to have someone who's really just concerned about Sookie.
Yeah.
That actually looks out for
her. In fact, this last episode was just a festival of allegiance changing.
Right.
So that was, and I feel kind of bad about finally losing the Magister. I have to tell you, he's one of my favorite characters, and you know, even though he absolutely deserved it, I at the same time was saying, oh darn.
I have to say, the more episodes they have with the King of Mississippi, the more I like him, because his equivalent in the books is the King of Arkansas, who was nowhere near as interesting.
They're doing a great job with him, and I love his boyfriend.
Oh, yeah. He's so flaming.
He's awesome. It's like, you know, people are being killed left, right, and center, and he's saying, oh, save the boss. You just bled on my carpet, and you know how old that is.
He's great.
I love that. It's wonderful.
But, yeah, I really like the King of Mississippi. They really did a good job with fleshing his character out mm-hmm. and making him way more interesting. I still think that the Queen has suffered from... She's not quite as interesting.
No, she's not. And I think it's a combination of factors. They don't write her all that well. But also, personally, I just don't think she's terribly interesting as an actress. I don't think she's got much in the way of range.
Yeah, because I think a better actress could have made that role.
Brought so much more to it, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
I'm trying to think of what's going on with Lafayette.
This was a Lafayette Light episode.
Yeah, because he wasn't really in it. He was at the diner, he was cooking. Oh, I do like what's going on with Sam and his brother. And finally, his brother has broken away from his crazy parents.
Oh my God. That, you know, I think that gets the award for most dysfunctional family. They've got, not just on the show, but on TV.
Yeah, that's pretty dysfunctional.
And I thought that they had done pretty awesome examples of that before, but this really, the Mickensons, I think, kind of take the prize.
He should be thankful that his mom gave him away as a baby.
Wow.
Like, he should just be like, thank God. because as messed up as he was, as confused as he was growing up, wondering who his parents were and wondering what his special abilities to turn into animals was about, he still came out pretty normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, he still came out like a regular, you know,
even though
guy.
He was abandoned at 15, really.
Yeah, he was pretty well adjusted, and all kinds of crazy stuff happened. He still ended up being a decent guy. Mm-hmm. His brother is screwed, you know? It's like, well, he needs therapy.
I mean, you know, they've been putting him in a dog fighting competition for God knows how long now. And I actually feel kind of sorry for the mother, because prior to that, she was the one who was going into the ring.
Right.
She made really clear. So I think she's so used to being abused herself that she's got no reference of how to be a proper mother. And, you know, you could see how upset she was when her son was in the ring, but she doesn't know any better. You know, I think she would do better if she knew better, but she doesn't, because this has been her entire existence. So I feel kind of sorry for her. I have no sympathy whatsoever for the father.
Right.
He just creeps me out completely.
Well, yes, and he's always in his underwear, so that's just weird.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
I mean, in this week, he actually had on clothes, and they made him take them off. I was like, are you kidding me?
Can't get enough of that.
He is not someone you want to see naked.
No.
Not at all. And it's just, I think he...
Especially almost, the dirty underwear, I think, just really makes that image. Wow.
He is the definition of white trash.
He is.
If you want to look it up in the dictionary, there's a picture of him in it. But I think this week's episode was really good. I don't know what the fans who haven't read the book make of the whole reveal with Suki. I did like the fact that at the very end, when she wakes up and Bill's like, "Oh, Suki, I saved your life," and she screams when she sees him. Maybe she actually has gotten smarter. Please. Because I've been waiting for her to break up with Bill for like 2 seasons at this point. And maybe this is the straw that breaks the camel's back, and she's finally like, she's like, "I know he let you get raped, but it's okay because he loves me." Seriously? Like, that's basically what happened. Bill totally let her best friend, Tara, get raped repeatedly and was like, "Oh, I don't care about her."
Well, you know, he was not exactly in the best position to
help her
in the first place. I think he was just trying to think long term how he could make this
work. I know,
I
understand what you're saying.
But it wasn't exactly his shining moment, no.
But there was no doubt in his, there was no guilt on his face. You know, like when he didn't go save Suki, you could tell he was torn a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was like, "Okay, I'm playing the long game, and Suki's going to have to figure something out, but, you know, I can't leave right now." When he saw that Tara was tied up and being abused by this other guy, he was like, "Oh, well." You know, there was no conflict. And I'm sorry, I can't date a guy that lets my best friend get abused and raped in the next room. I'm sorry. That's an issue.
Well, I think based on her reaction when she woke up, which was pretty strong, and also the previews for the coming week, I think that it's not exactly going to be a big, happy reunion between the two of them.
I know,
it's
but
gonna,
you know,
be kind of rocky from now on.
My problem, though, if I was Tara, the fact that he let that happen to me is not enough for you to break up with the guy would cause a problem with our friendship. That's all I'm saying.
Well, clearly Tara wants nothing better than to see him just go up in flames. And
yeah, she tried to kill him.
She kicked him out of the truck, you know.
Yeah, but I'm saying still, it would cause me a problem with Suki. Me and Suki would have issues, you know, at that point. But that's just me and how I see friendship, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, he let this happen to me and you still want to date him? Yeah, we have a problem. So anyway, That's all I'm gonna say with True Blood. Let's move on. This we're gonna go into Leverage.
Okay.
And you guys take it away because I actually don't really remember what happened in the episode.
I actually took notes because I don't tend to remember all week either. But it was the one with Bill Ingvall and the car thief.
Oh, ring. The car thief ring. Car yeah. Yes. Go. So. You guys talk.
No, I enjoyed it. I thought it was cute. You know, it's typical Leverage. It's nothing that's going to stick with you forever.
Stick with you past the end of the episode? No,
really, it's not. But I really like this show because it's just pure fluff. It's silly and it's fun, and they don't attempt to be heavy or serious or, you know, make big points socially or anything like that. They just try to be fun, and they do it well. Because by the time the episode is over, I'm left smiling usually, and the same thing was with this one. It was just cute and fun, and filled with a lot of preposterous stuff that you're just saying, "Oh please," but they do it in a way that just is breezy and silly, and so I like it.
Stealing a car with the with his sequence of pulling on the levers the right time.
Yeah, it's like, sure, that works.
No, what's even better is stealing a car with your cell phone.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was
especially after they've told you that it's an unbreakable code that no one's been able to do before, and he just sits there with his cell phone and goes, okay, well, here. Done.
Yeah. And he only has, 2 minutes to do it?
Yeah. And has never done it before.
And
start it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
So it's silly, but it's one of those things where you just go, get past it because it's funny. It works. It was cute on that level.
I don't know. My patience for that is kind of wearing thin. I mean, what are we on? Season 3 of the show?
Yeah. I will admit that it's not... the show is not as good as it was in its first season when it was fresh. And I think they were also devoting more time and more money toward the show. And it showed... But I it's still cute enough that I like it.
I'm barely hanging on because I do like the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy watching the characters each week. But man, there's a difference between good guys silly and Leverage silly. Leverage sometimes feels lazy to me. Like they didn't bother to come up with something better. Like, okay, they bring to the car with the cell phone because I can't think of anything cooler than that. You know, that's kind of the feeling I'm starting to get with some of the Leverage episodes, and so that's not enjoyable anymore.
That was my big problem when they were showing two episodes back to back, was that they were the same episode.
And right, because it feels lazy. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, that's just...
And at least, this was a little bit different, because they were stealing cars, which is... I don't think they've...
They haven't done that.
So that's at least something different, but... And then, of course, Parker had to go dress like, something she'd seen on... television or a movie or something like that, because she was a car thief, so she had her hair all bound in the special ponytail and
I like the girl that they found. That was pretty cool. Yeah. But they wrapped that up with such a tight bow that I was like, really?
Yeah. I don't think it's gonna work out that cleanly, frankly, but it's one of those things that I just kind of write off because I don't take the show seriously, and I don't think the show takes itself seriously.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't take itself
seriously. I'm good with that.
I appreciate that, but I'd still like them to put some effort into the story. Mm-hmm. You can be a light and funny show, but work at it a little bit. You know, that's all I'm asking. So I just don't feel like this season they've really done anything to put any effort into any of the character advancement, because that's the other thing. Is the other seasons, even if the storylines were a little blah, they had more character stuff that was interesting. And this season, it's like Nate is a drunk, and then he's not a drunk because they all.
Well, he's
like,
a drunk when it's convenient for them to remember that he's a drunk.
Well, I mean, they had this whole.
Whereas it used to be a big issue.
Right.
Yeah.
And it used to be a big deal, and then they went through this whole thing where he had to go through rehab, or else they weren't going to work for him because him being drunk actually screwed them up, and now they're like, well, you do the plots better when you're drunk. Really? No.
I don't think so.
There's no way that I believe that him drinking makes him more intelligent. I, 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 that just doesn't work for me. And yeah, like you said, sometimes he's drinking all the time. On one episode he's drinking all the time, on the next episode he's not.
He's totally sober. Yeah, it's like, you know, whoever is writing that episode, whether they remember to throw that in or not. And it's the on again, off again thing with Hardison and Parker too. You know, I really like them together.
Yeah, I do too.
But it's like one episode it looks like they're moving in that direction, and the next episode they forget about it. So, you know.
It also could be the, I don't know, but if they're showing the episodes in order, because I know that was an issue first season.
Oh, yeah.
They forgot to, or they did it on purpose. They had an episode in the middle of the season where they had just met each other. And if I didn't know that ahead of time, I would have been really confused.
Yeah, I was really confused. I didn't know until afterward that that's what they were doing. And I was going, what? We've covered this already.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
So, I mean, who knows? They might just be airing them in
random order,
and then that's the way it is.
Well, that would actually make more sense than what's going on right now, so.
Yeah. Well, I know that they've also got the appearing and disappearing arc story.
Oh, yeah, because they're being blackmailed.
Yeah, and that sometimes...
It's like, oh, yeah, right?
Oh, that's right. Well, because most of the time they don't talk about it or have anything to do with it. Or if you're lucky, the woman who's blackmailing them, who's got to be the worst actress in the history of television, she comes in and she says something to them and threatens them in some vague way, and they have to do something tacked on to the show, and then she leaves and we don't remember her for two episodes. You know,
I'm sure it'll be part of the finale, but I actually don't care. And that's the thing, is I'm actually getting to the point that this might be my last season of Leverage. I might be deleting it. I'm trying, you know.
Well, you know, I told you I already got to that level with Lie to Me.
We'll get to that.
But yeah, I can understand, you know, there's a certain point where you reach with a show where you say to yourself, this is good, I can keep watching it, or I can't stand it anymore, I've had enough. And yeah, you know, so I can understand.
As you say, we're now on Lie to Me. Let's.
And that was a brilliant segue. If I do say so myself.
Go ahead and bench. Because this week's episode was... You said it was about...
Well, I didn't watch this week's episode because I gave up a week ago. It was the politician episode that finally I got about 10 minutes into it, and I finally said, I've had enough of this. I just can't deal with it anymore. And I turned it off, and I deleted the entire series off my DVR. And
that's disappointing. Oh, that was the episode where they got rid of the blonde chick who was there for no reason. She, like, gave them a loan... And then was like...
Oh, did they finally get rid of her? Okay.
At the end of the episode, because the politicians were her friends, and she brought them to the Lightman group, and she was like, oh, they're having this problem, can you help them out? And she brought Lightman into the case, and she actually lied, giving one of them an alibi, because she thought that person was her friend. But she, you know, why are you going to lie... It makes no sense. You hire
to
the
people
Lightman...
who really are, you know, the
right.
best
so,
at telling
yeah.
them you're
so
lying.
You lie to them about your alibi, and then they go, hey, you know, you're lying about your alibi. And so that...
Surprise.
That ended up being the thing that allowed them to get out of their deal, because she, like, bought half of their company or something. Mm-hmm. And so they made her sign it back over to them. They still have to pay her back the money.
Well, it's
now
good
she
to know she's gone, because she was one of the elements that was driving me crazy.
Yeah, so she disappeared at the end of that episode. The thing that's going on now is they introduced, I think it was a guy that Jillian Foster was interested in, that psychiatrist from that group home or whatever.
Oh, okay.
They were flirting with each other a couple episodes ago, and this week's episode you find that they're all lovey-dovey, rolling around in bed and everything, and he's in the shower, and she's snooping, but like in a cute girlfriend kind of way. Mm-hmm. She's like looking through his sock drawer, and of course finds false passports,
because that happens all the time.
Right. Who the heck is some secret person who keeps his extra passports in his sock drawer? But that's beside the point. So she finds the totally different passports and goes, who the heck is this guy? Which is a valid question. Mm-hmm. So then she's all freaked out. And what actually tripped me out was, as a lying expert, I would think she would be better at lying. because she was sending up signals all over the place. She was uncomfortable around him now.
Mm-hmm.
And she sucked at pretending that she wasn't. She was trying, and it was really awful. But she got the FBI guy to look him up and try to figure out, you know, what was going on with him. And finally, he caught her looking for, because she went looking for the passport again.
Mm-hmm.
And he catches her, and he's like, what you doing at my house when I'm not supposed to be here? And looking through my sock drawer.
Nothing.
It was so, she couldn't come up with anything. And I was like, this is why you should watch Burn Notice, because they tell you how to get out of.
I dropped my cell phone.
In your house.
Somewhere in your sock drawer.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was, that was pretty bad, but you end up finding out, well, at least his version, because she was, so she finally just confronts him and is like, look, I found this, what the heck is going on? And he's like, I'm an undercover DEA agent, and I'm searching for drugs at that group home you found me in, and blah, 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 and I shouldn't be telling you this, because I'll be fired, but I love you. Don't you love me, too? So that was a little bit cheesy, but the thing is that actor was on The Unit, which is a show I used to watch,
mm-hmm.
and I loved him on The Unit, so he can basically do no wrong.
You tune in just for that.
Well, I've watched a lot of me anyway, and you just added an actor that I already like, so thumbs up. But I'm still not sure if I believe him or not. And of course, my problem is I like Jillian and Lightman together, so you got this guy, and now it looks like their relationship is getting serious. Well, the only thing that was really kind of funny was she introduces him to Lightman as her boyfriend now, and he gives the guy some speech about, okay, she's my best friend. You know what that means, right? So you can't hurt her. And he gives her the whole, you can't hurt her, she's my best friend speech. But it was kind of awkward because it seemed like he was going to be saying she's my best friend, so don't hurt her. But it felt like the way he was saying it to him, it felt like she's my girl and not yours, so you need to back off. Like, that's kind of, it was a weird thing, like the way he was talking to the guy. But of course, Lightman is 5'5" and
there's only just so threatening he's
and that guy, he on The Unit, he played a special forces guy, so he's like, he's a pretty big guy, so he was just kind of like, yeah, okay. So I don't actually remember what the case was. I remember all of that. I remember the episode now. It was Lightman was accused of murder. Well, he was accused of murder. He would have been accused of murder if he hadn't been lying for the entire episode. He basically gets brought a case of a guy. They show him the guy that had been killed the night before. And he realizes as soon as he sees the picture that he was with that guy. And he was probably the last one with him and that he would be a prime suspect. So he immediately goes, oh, this is the guy that you found? All right, sure, we'll take the case. And then he goes on and does his own investigation and starts dodging all the witnesses because they're going to recognize him. And then, what's her name? Torres deletes footage of him because somebody took a video of what was going on. It was a fight. So somebody took a video. He's standing in the middle of the video. And so Torres,
waving at the camera.
And so Torres is like deleting him from the video. And she's like, what the heck is going on? And he goes, oh, don't worry about it. She's like, you were at the crime scene. And he goes, oh, yeah, I was. So, yeah, don't worry about that. She's like, I deleted you from the footage. She goes, oh, thanks. And then they have DNA from the guy that gets killed. There's like DNA under his fingernails. And it's his DNA. And so he goes to the FBI dude. He's like, yeah, you know the DNA test you're running? And he shows him his wrist. He's like, yeah, that's mine. I need you to delay that because I didn't kill him, but it's going to look like I did. So could you make that slow down a little bit? And the FBI dude's like, what? He's like, why didn't you tell us you were there? He's like, why didn't you just come out, tell us you were there, we eliminate you as a suspect and keep going? And he goes, yeah, I didn't trust your boss, so I'm just going to do this investigation on my own. And it's crazy. It's actually pretty funny. Like, the whole, because what's funny is, like, they bring in a guy, and the guy's giving a description of who he saw, and it's a description of him. And so he hears the description. He literally goes diving into, like, another room so the guy doesn't see him. And so then when they're interrogating him, there's, like, a screensaver on the computer showing the people who work at the Lightman Group, and his freaking picture comes up, and the guy's like, he looks sort of like that. So it was actually a pretty funny episode, just from him ducking and dodging stuff, and then in like the last little bit, he's like, yeah, I was there. Yeah, he's identifying me. Yeah, whatever. So, but he, by the time he does all that, he's actually figured out who killed him. Mm. So, or he's come very close to figuring out who killed him. But I guess his thing was he didn't want to be held up in questioning because he knew what would happen. Him being the prime suspect, they're going to spend the next couple of days talking to him. And he's like, well, I know I didn't do it. So why waste my time? So his solution is to figure out who did it instead. But I kind of think that that creates an evidence problem.
That's one of the things that drove me crazy about the show and that eventually, you know, kind of drove me from it, was that they do things that really are logically impossible. That they only happen on television. They don't happen in real life. I mean, Leverage does the same thing, but it gets away with it for me because it doesn't take itself seriously. Whereas with Lie to Me, they're trying to do things occasionally that are serious, and they're also trying to make you really take his methodology as a genuine scientific methodology, you know, partly because he's based on a real guy, but he's based on a real guy whose methodology has been completely debunked. So, you know, it just drives me crazy. It's like he looks at people and, oh, well, you've had a little twitch in your eye, which says that you're lying. And, you know, and they could have been thinking of their laundry list. They weren't necessarily paying attention to him, but he always knows exactly what's going on.
Well, no,
he's never
no.
wrong.
Well, no, actually, he's wrong a lot. Because he'll be like,
not about the main point. It's like one of the things
he'll be right about them lying, but he won't know. He could be, what he'll be wrong about is why they were lying.
Sometimes, yeah. But then his main points will always be proved true. And that's, I think if you want to get to the main thing that drives me crazy about the show, if you look at most mysteries, you go through the show trying to figure out who done it, and your hero character will eventually be the one who comes up with what the solution is, and you know that, and that's how every show works, ta-da. But with this, it's not a matter of finding out the clues and getting to the solution of the mystery. It's hearing Lightman within the first 5 minutes of the show telling you what's going on and who is guilty and all of this. And the rest of the show is just reaffirming the conclusions that he's already come to.
Except in the episodes you quit on, he was completely wrong. He was wrong all the way up until the very, very end. Because the guy was a politician, he was lying because he's a politician. And so he was totally wrong on who, because he thought that the husband was the guy who did it. And then he thought it was the manager, the guy who manages, you know, the guy's campaign. He thought it was him. And then that guy wasn't it. So like for almost the entire episode, he's focused on the wrong people. And he doesn't even have the person who actually did it, even on his radar. And then once he finally eliminates the two people, he's like, because one of them actually gets killed, and he's like, oh, I guess they didn't do it. So after he actually eliminates the people that he's absolutely sure are the ones who did it, he finally goes, well, who the heck is left? And realizes that it was the wife who was standing in the background, not bothering anybody, and he actually talked to her at one point, and he knew she was lying about her alibi, but he thought it was just because she was drunk somewhere or whatever. He didn't realize it was because she was going around killing people. And so he's like, oh, all right. So it was you. Okay. So, I mean, he was totally
okay,
wrong.
Okay, so that one was a little off what their usual
I just
thing
I actually but find it ironic that that's the episode
that's
you quit
the episode
on.
But up until that point, and it seemed to be going in the same direction when I turned it off and said, I'm done. Up until that point, that really had been the crux of every episode, was he comes up with a conclusion, and by the end, he's proved right. And
that happens
on some.
I don't
need to keep watching that every single week.
I really enjoy the show. I mean,
well, you know, you're allowed. It's no longer my thing.
All right, let's move on to Good Guys.
Yay.
We got the summer finale, as they're calling it. Because I think
it's only like a month and a half.
Yeah, I was like, we have to wait till September. Okay. Instead
it's
of just
otherwise known as a random episode they decided to stop at.
Right. Because it didn't feel finale-ish in any way.
I actually don't think it was even supposed to end there, because the website that I usually check to get my TV schedule seemed to have episodes all through August until suddenly last week it changed. So...
Well, I mean, I figure it's a good thing in that this was supposed to be a summer show, and it was going to run all summer, and now that they're actually playing it in the regular season, I think they're trying to gauge how well the show will do with a regular fall schedule, which is good for the show, in my opinion. Because when you burn a show...
Although I'd like it on another day but Friday.
Well, that's
Friday
true.
Is not the greatest
that's,
day for
That's
it.
Absolutely true, but... It's good for the longevity of the show. If the show does well enough, because that's the other thing, on Friday, you don't have to do that well. You know, you're not expected to do great numbers on Friday.
Fox.
Well, as long as you can win your time slot, you know, that's really pretty much what they're looking for.
Right, or do decently well. So
I'm going to keep watching it.
It has a lower level of expectation. That's fine. They're putting it up on the regular schedule. So the way I figure it is, if it does well, they'll keep making episodes for the rest of the season. So,
yeah, and I hope it does well because I really enjoy that show.
I do too.
I think it's really cute. It's really funny, and Bradley Whitford is just hysterical.
Him and his mustache.
Oh my God, I just everything he does is hilarious in that show.
Yeah,
he just has it down.
I actually think that is it Colin Hanks?
Yes.
That's his name.
Yes,
he's. Okay, as a straight man, like I don't think it's actually him as an actor. I actually think it's how they're writing his character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's bland. He is so like he's supposed to be the straight guy, and that's fine for a few episodes. But now I'm bored with him. I'm bored with his crush on the lawyer chick. I totally don't care about that at all.
Yeah, well, they don't do anything with it. It just keeps recycling the same thing over and over.
I'm like,
he's already. I told her that he's still in love with her, and then
it didn't change
didn't
anything.
Break up with her boyfriend, so he's like, "Oh, I'll just forget it." And then,
yeah.
Of course, she has forgotten it or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I totally don't care at all about any of that. Anything going on with his storyline, I do not care. And to be fair, Stark doesn't really have a storyline. Really, he didn't have anything ongoing, but that's fine. It's he's standing.
He sort of did this week, though.
With the relationship?
With the girl.
Yeah, he's like, he's so in love.
Like looking in the mirror and seeing the hottest woman in the world looking back.
And then she left
him. Just died when I saw it. And she left her sock.
I know. He's like, I sniffed the sock until there's only the scent of me left. He was such a girl. It was hilarious. And for the super macho guy, for him to be that pathetic was great. And I like the fact when he dives on her and he's trying to talk to her, yet he's like kissing her at the same time as he's talking to her.
She's like,
get off
of me.
Oh my good. That was so funny. Like all of that was great. But I think that the weak link, right, they have to do something with Colin Hanks' character.
They really do.
Because I think he has potential to be interesting.
Oh, I think so. The funniest bits, I think, are when he starts taking on Dan Stark's personality traits.
Right.
You know, when he starts becoming corrupted, and that gets to be very, very funny.
Yeah. I think, anytime he's with Stark, he's fine. Anytime he's not with Stark, it's a train wreck.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, like you said, the bit with him and the DA is just not interesting.
No.
It goes nowhere. And
she as a character is boring. And I'd say first thing you do if you get a partial second season is can her. You know?
Or at least reduce her scenes to something in the background, like make her useful when they need a DA, but, you know, kill the relationship stuff because it's not going anyplace.
No. And it's not interesting, and I don't care. The only reason you would do a relationship is for the audience to get invested, and it's just not working.
Mm.
However, I'm bizarrely interested in the police chief and Stark. Like, I want to know what their background is, because they were partners at one point, and he flirts with her on occasion, and she's, like, thrown off by it. She doesn't quite know what to do with it.
Her reaction is just...
Yeah, I know.
Like she wants to hose herself off.
I know, but that's what's interesting. Like, I totally think that would be interesting.
Well, because she's got to know if they were working together for so long, she's got to know where he's been in the past.
Yes.
She's like, know where that's been. I don't want to touch it. But I get that. But I actually think that their chemistry is interesting to watch. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see them trapped in a room together. Like, I just for the...
Waiting for that episode. The elevator episode.
Yeah, where they're trapped in an elevator and it's just the two of them. And he has nothing to do other than to flirt with her. Hilarity. Like, I just love that.
Yeah, and she is good. She's got great timing. And I think the two of them have, like you said, terrific comic chemistry.
Right.
So, yeah.
So, Good Guys, fall, as I put in parentheses, fall finale, was really, it was a pretty good episode. It was one of their strongest ones, I think. I really liked it. But it did not resemble a finale in any sense or form. But we will be looking forward to it on Fridays, along with all our other Friday shows, apparently. But the only good thing I have to say is the other shows that I have that come on Friday are on Stars, and so I can just watch them whenever I want.
Isn't Supernatural moving to Friday this year?
Yes, Supernatural is moving to Friday, and we will have whatever sci-fi Friday thing that I watch anyway. Yeah,
but that's what DVRs are for.
Right. The next show up is White Collar, and I don't know.
I'm going to be stepping back from that because I don't watch that.
I was amused by this week's episode, which was the Mozzie episode.
Yay, Mozzie!
And the fact that they would just call each other their respective names. You would go Suit, and they would go Little Guy. And that would just be their relationship.
Well, what I love the fact is that Mozzie is so terrified of being inside the FBI building.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. They had the whole scene with the camera doing the pull out, push in, and he's like, oh my god, I'm in the FBI building! Like, you know, having a panic attack, and
In the elevator, and he was like hiding from the
camera,
and of course they knew who it was, or at least Peter knew who it was.
He's like, it's the little guy, I can tell from the top of his hat. Yeah. You know, it's like, so, but he always has the secret code words. If you're going to meet him somewhere, you have to meet him and say the right password. He's so paranoid. It's great. And for him to actually show up in the FBI building showed how much he really liked that girl.
Yes.
So that was pretty good. He's like, no, what was he wearing? What's it called? A cravat?
Ascot.
An ascot cravat. That's totally different. An ascot.
An orange one, because it's her favorite color.
Exactly. I was just like, that is the funniest thing I've ever seen. That was great. But yeah, it was a good episode. It was all about him and the fact that he has a crush and he has to save the girl. He's like, she's like, are you sure you have connections to the FBI? I can't say. But then he shows up and totally saves the day with a friggin', you know, FBI hit squad. I thought that was great.
And the perfect exchange that had no middleman, but he'd forgotten about that.
Well, what was great is it was like, he's like giving code words all over the place, and I was like, what the? But he knew that
Neil would figure it out,
and the fact that they're such good friends, they can send each other really abstract code words that were dependent on a book that he happened to have left behind in a chair, that he knew that he would follow the code to get to the... I was like, what?
And that Neil would has enough of a thief brain that he remembered all of the stuff that he was spouting off.
Like, well, and the fact that...
Page 27, line 3 or whatever it was. I don't remember.
I don't remember it either. But what was great was the perfect exchange was a theory that they came up with a long time ago that they actually... Oh, wait. They really did do it, didn't they?
No, well...
I think they did.
According to Neil, he got caught before they could do it.
I don't believe him. I think they totally did it. Did that perfect exchange. But the perfect exchange totally makes sense. But what was great is he's like, oh wait, I'm the middleman. We didn't anticipate it with a middleman.
No.
The middleman becomes irrelevant.
And can be shot.
Right. Well, what was hilarious is they both figured out, like, Neil was like, oh wait, we didn't have a middleman. And then it's like they come to the realization at different points, and it was pretty good. I liked all the codes and everything, and Mozzie is a fantastic character who usually only gets like 5 minutes per episode.
Yeah.
And having a whole episode all about him was really pretty good.
And I liked that they brought up a previous episode too, when he'd been talking to Elizabeth because she was like, oh, when Mozzie was here sweeping the house for bugs, he talked about that girl. And they never showed that, but it was cool to bring that back in.
Well, because he had been at the house, in that particular episode, they showed him arrive, and he was there for dinner, and then he was there, he was there all day.
Yeah.
And he was there with Elizabeth. Oh, what's going on with Elizabeth? She hasn't been in an episode all season. She looks pregnant.
Yeah, Tiffany Thiessen is or was pregnant when they started this season, and so they've been green screening her in, and that's why it looks very strange.
Yeah, and it looks like green screen.
It looks awful. Yeah. And it looks like they've been trying to shrink her a little bit. And if I didn't know that, I would be very confused because...
Well, I was watching the episode, and I was like, because she's in the opening credits, and it's his wife, and usually each season we have really cool scenes with them at the house, and I really like his relationship with his wife.
Yeah.
And this season, it's like, oh, he's spending all his time with Neil, and he's not spending any time with his wife. I was like, way to help the slashers out. Like, it's like he hasn't spent any time with his wife this season.
Well, they've been throwing her in for, 2 seconds every episode, but then they just mentioned this past one that, oh, this is the last time we're going to have lunch because I'm not going to see you for a week or something, I guess.
Yeah, for a while. Yeah. She's going on some trip. And they didn't even say where she's going. And I have
she's
to say...
She's going away to have a baby. That's where she's going.
But the thing is, she hasn't actually been in any episodes. This was the first episode we've seen her all season. He's talked about her. He's, been on the phone. He's like, yeah, I'm talking, blah, blah, blah. And he'll be on the phone.
She's been in episodes, but it's been really short.
I was specifically looking for her. I did not see her.
Oh, I was specifically looking for the scenes that they had talked about green screening her in. So
I know this week she was definitely green screened. It was so awful. I was like, that is the worst green screen I've ever seen.
I think they may have skipped an episode, but the first one back, they did the where they were sitting on the terrace, and I was like, oh, that's the green screening they were talking about, and that looks awful, and what are they doing to her? Because she looks fake. Because I think they've been shrinking her.
They're trying to make her look small. Yeah, you can do that with green screen, but still, ew.
Yeah, it was not...
And she still looks pregnant. And it's like, I'm watching, I was like, is she pregnant?
It looks like she's not really there. And you have
Makes sense because why would you add a baby to this show?
Right.
You know, so it doesn't make sense to have her pregnant on the show because their relationship is so to the side that it wouldn't make sense. And then how could he spend all the time with Neil if he's got a baby at home he's supposed to be dealing with? So, okay, it totally makes sense, but still... I'd rather her just... Why couldn't they have just shot her behind a counter at the house and done with it?
The one thing, they were doing the green screen specifically because she couldn't travel to New York, so they shot it all in L.A., and then they went to New York to shoot the rest of the show.
Oh.
So they pre-shot all of her scenes in Los Angeles.
Okay, that does make more sense. Okay, that does make sense, but wow, that green screen
looks
bad.
Yeah, it looks bad.
Oh, so, man. I actually would rather not see her than
be
do...
on the phone. And
the thing is, you know what they could have done? They could have just had them talking on the phone and shot her in L.A. on the phone. Mm-hmm. And just from the waist up, having her have conversations with him. No green screen necessary.
Because it doesn't need to be outside New York. Like, they've all been exteriors in New York.
Well, I mean, every time he's with his wife has been in the house.
Yeah.
So all they had to do was do a mock-up of, the kitchen or the living room and just done that little table or whatever and had her on the phone talking to him. The end. You know, it was just like, oh, that was just the worst solution. Okay, anyway. Whatever.
The budget is, I guess. I don't know.
But the show itself has been good. That was just one thing that was bothering me. I was just like, this is so weird. And, well, the only other reason I was talking about the slasher thing is because... Neil's girlfriend is now dead, and he's angsting and sad about it. You said theoretically?
Did I say theoretically?
Well, we saw her on the plane, and we saw the plane blow up while she was standing in the doorway. So, I really don't see how she survives that. And then...
We still have the other girl floating around out there somewhere.
What other girl?
The fence, Alex.
Well, she's been in the episode already. We've seen her.
Yeah. But there was always that possibility of the two of them.
Yeah, but she doesn't trust him because he works for the FBI now. So, and though there's weird tension between the suit and his assistant. What's her name?
Oh, yeah. The new girl.
I don't remember her name. But, they end up in the most awkward situations. I'm like... Are they trying to say something's going on?
Because it seems like they've had a past, but I don't really know yet.
I can't just, because it would be weird, because I don't see him cheating on his wife, so that's just, it's just bizarre.
I was surprised that I didn't realize that the other female FBI agent had been written out of the show because the actress's contract ended. I was literally just looking that up because I was very confused how she just suddenly vanished. And
I don't remember her.
Lauren?
I don't remember her.
She was on the whole first season, and then all of a sudden she was gone, and there was this other female FBI agent, and I was like, where did
I think the new one is actually more memorable, because I actually noticed her, because she's doing stuff. The other woman, I'm like, you tell me there was a female FBI agent, and
well,
I believe
Leo
you.
Used to flirt with her, because she was a female FBI agent, but...
But I just figured, well, Neil flirts with every female, yeah. So I didn't notice, but, alright. Okay.
Yeah, there was, and she's gone, but...
I like the new woman better. I do like her. And I've seen her in other stuff. And she's a good actress, so I'm fine with that. All right, let's move on to Psych.
I wasn't a big fan of this past episode. I like it. I love the show. But it's in the lower ranks of my liking Psych at this point. Sean was, like, really wrong a lot, and no one seemed to call him on it. And it was where he was... with the two older women and
right.
And the guy trying to do, like, beat your
Yeah, he got
man.
The poison. He got who did the poisoning wrong pretty much through the whole episode.
The entire
episode, he had it wrong.
And he got poisoned. And Lassiter never said anything to him about, like, why are you just, like, wrong and why are you being poisoned? And, like,
yeah, for a psychic, you're not, like, shouldn't you have known the poison was in the glass before you drank it, right?
I feel like that's something that should have been mentioned at least once by somebody. The dad being like, hey, you're really screwing up right now, so you better get your act together, or Lassiter finding some way to tease him. Or
I did find it funny that everybody kept blowing off his poisoning. They were like, you're only barely poisoned. And he's like, what?
Yeah.
Obviously somebody was trying to kill me. I think that's the important part.
It was definitely funny. I just, there were things that bugged me about it.
I thought that Gus being offended that the woman didn't find him attractive was just like, to just get over it. Every woman in the world does not have to find you attractive.
Because at first he didn't even want to date her, and then because she was...
And because she didn't find him attractive, he then had to... I was like, you're such a guy. But I mean, I'm like, Gus, you're an attractive man. It's okay. You know, every woman in the world does not have
to... rub the head?
I do want to rub the head, actually. Yes, I do. But it was funny. It was light. There's nothing interesting. I'm not sure what they were trying to say about lesbians in the episode. It was a little weird.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not quite sure what their social commentary fell on the whole, you know, secret lesbian is in love with this other woman, so she kills all the guys to get the woman that she loves, but at no point does she ever say, hey, I actually like you myself.
Right.
And instead, she just murders everyone. I was like, that's a stupid solution. So I wasn't quite sure, and then that was the whole reason. That's the reason why the woman didn't find Gus attractive, because she was a lesbian.
Oh, that could be the only possible reason.
And the fact that he had to show up at the jail after she had been sent to prison, and he's like, so let's be clear. To get the final answer, he's like, let's be clear. The reason that you didn't find me attractive is because you only like women, right? And she was just...
I just killed people. Why are you talking?
She's like, would you have preferred if I had killed you? And he was like... Yeah, maybe, you know. I was just like, okay. She's
he would
like,
have been dead, but his ego would have been intact.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And she's just like, never come visit me here at this prison again. So, you know, that little bit, it was kind of funny, but I was like, I don't know if I should be offended. I'm not quite sure.
I was much more a fan of the previous tap dancing episode.
Oh, the tap dancing. Oh, that was so good. That was such a good episode.
Which I had heard that they were going to get Dulé to show off. And so it was
he
waiting
was
for
fantastic.
It to happen.
Oh my God, that episode was so good. I like that whole, the bit at the end where they did the full on tap.
Yeah.
I think I watched it like 3 times. Like, I was like, oh my God, that was good. And then I, like, rewound it, watched it again. It was like, and then even Lassiter with the little kids, it was great. Oh, that was good. But yeah, that was a different episode. This one was, you're right, it's not the best one that they've done. And it was just, it was all right. And but it also felt slightly offensive to old people. Like, it was the whole point.
Did they have, like, a checklist they were going down?
I don't know.
Well, we can offend these people, and this group hasn't been offended
yet. It was
so
weird because it was like their whole thing was, well, I'm trying to investigate this case. So I'm dating this old chick to see if she's gonna, if she likes me so I can get information from her. But it's not like I'm attracted to her or anything because she's, you know, she's, like, totally old. And I was like, really? And she's actually an attractive woman.
Uh-huh.
It's the woman from 20, did you ever watch 24? What's her real name? She's famous.
Yeah. I've seen her in other stuff. I used to watch 24, but I didn't.
She was the first lady on season 5 of 24.
Yeah, which I didn't see her on 24 because I didn't stop
and
watching.
And I can't.
Oh, okay. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. She's an attractive woman.
She's a nice looking woman.
And, but the whole thing was, oh, she's old, so I'm just going to pretend to date her because she's old, and then she'll just tell me what I want to know. And I'm like, really? At no point does he mention that she's actually a good-looking woman.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a little weird.
And not really that old.
I'm just like, wow.
It's like if they're over 25, just throw them away. They're done.
Oh, we are.
They're past their
Sean.
Freshness date.
Yeah, we are talking about Sean.
Sean has Peter Pan syndrome, so.
He is pretty shallow. All right. The next show we're going to talk about is Burn Notice.
It was interesting to see them bring back, what's his name? Michael's friend.
You're not talking about Simon. Yvonne. All right. I still call him Uriel from Supernatural. I was like, I don't bother to learn his new name. But
especially because he's Michael's friend in quotes, because that's how he gets captioned.
Oh, right. Yeah, I like that, how they always caption people saying whatever they are. The only thing about him was it felt a little underhanded with him going to see Fee. But
well,
I did.
Was one of the things that I liked about it was when she actually chose Michael, where he gave her that choice, and you didn't see it till the end of the episode. But she chose Michael over giving Jesse back his career.
Well, I didn't think it was so much. I didn't think her conflict was Jesse versus Michael because Michael's going to win every time. I think the conflict that he presented to her was, if you give me the Bible, that takes away this obsession that Michael has, and you can now have him.
Right.
So, but the problem with that is now there would be this big secret hanging over them between the two of them, and I think she just didn't want to deal with that. Which I think that was her temptation, not so much Jesse, because I mean she likes Jesse, but a choice, if she can only save one of them, she's saving Michael. So.
No, it wasn't even so much saving them. It was just because she has been annoyed about the fact that Jesse's been put in this position, and they keep using that. And
well, the other thing that lets you know how underhanded Vaughn is he burned Jesse, and it's very obvious that he can unburn him at any time he wants to.
Right.
And so that makes it even worse. So yeah, I don't trust this guy.
He had to just like tip his hand for that, and luckily, Michael had a favor to call in to deal with it.
Well, Vaughn's solution was like, I could have killed them both. Like, all right, whatever.
Yeah, but getting back to that is because he had these two FBI guys that had been around from the beginning of the show were the ones that were checking up on him in the very beginning, and then they came to him for help. And he's
Which
like,
is very ironic.
You're going to owe me.
Yeah.
And then they did, and they still do, apparently, because Michael's like, they're like, we're even, and Michael's like
no.
No.
I mean, Michael risked his life and almost got killed helping them out. Them showing up and threatening a guy for 5 seconds does not quite equal the same thing. So I think he's right. I think they still owe him.
Yeah.
But it was pretty good. And they got freaking promotions out of his work. They took credit
right.
for what he did.
Or something, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, they still owe him. But the episode itself was pretty good with him trying to stop a hitman and ended up being mistaken for a hitman. So he's like, all right, well, the guy thinks I'm a hitman. I'll just go with it to see where this takes me. And I thought that was pretty good. The whole conversation they were having when he was holding that landmine was pretty funny. All of that was really interesting.
And then him trying to turn the guy, because he's like, I know that you're not this person. Why are you this person? Why are you a hitman now when you have that tattoo? And I know better.
Like, right.
And then he finally does get through to him.
Yeah, that was... And then at the end, though, they did the psych out with The guy's like, oh, you've eliminated my competition. I can now collect the bounty. He's like, you've got to be kidding me.
He's like, no, never mind.
He's like, I was just kidding you. That was pretty good because he had me going for a second. I was like, really? But that actually, you know what? I actually think that would have been kind of cool if he had used Michael to help him get rid of the other guys and then collected the bounty himself. Yeah. I think that would have been pretty interesting.
And Michael would have had to think on his feet some more.
Right. So that was a good episode. I liked it. Very light on Jesse.
Yeah.
Very light on... It was pretty much light on everyone.
There was sort of light on Jesse other than the fact that there was the whole debate about him behind his back.
Right. He just wasn't in it.
Keeping him in the dark about the fact that they actually know who Simon is.
Well, that's the thing is they're now having secret meetings without him.
Mm-hmm.
So, except that their secret meetings are in places that they normally meet him at. So, the potential for him to show up... just randomly is pretty high.
Yeah. And why are you talking about Simon like you know who he is when you've already told me that you don't know who he is?
Yeah. That's obviously very much going to blow up by the end of the season. We know that.
Well, just the fact that eventually Jesse's going to find out what really happened is going to blow up.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So the next show we want to talk about is Eureka.
I thought it was a really fun episode. I don't know how much you got out of it because part of it tied in with the Warehouse 13 episode that they'd shown earlier in the week.
Well, I picked
Fargo visited the warehouse.
Right. I figured that out. I mean, I knew there was a crossover, and I know that character because I've seen season one of Warehouse 13, so it wasn't like she was some random character I'd never seen before.
Okay.
So I knew who she was, and they very specifically were like, oh, I came and helped you fix your mainframe, and now I'm giving you goo from my office. Okay.
Yeah, so they kind of, you know, brought back why he'd been there, kind of got the audience up to speed. But it was cute, really, the chemistry that they had when they were doing that particular episode. Because they really work well together, and they were very cute, and they were sort of falling for each other's nerdiness.
Yes.
Which was really kind of adorable. And so, and at the end, they actually kissed, and she pulled back because she's now dating this other guy on the show and said, no, I'm kissing you, but I'm thinking of him. And she went at the end of the episode to declare her love to this guy, and he broke up with her. And she was wonderful timing, and she's standing there with her jaw open like, what? So... yeah, that left things kind of open for her in Fargo when she came to visit.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. I liked the fact that Fargo was all nervous and was fixing his suit and getting ready for her to come and everything. That was all good. And, of course, my prediction from last week was that they were going somewhere with Grant and Allison this week, which they did, and irritated the crap out of me. The other thing that actually bothers me is... the way that they're showing their relationship now, because obviously Grant likes her and he's asked her out on a date.
Right.
If Allison and Carter were in the same place, she would say no. And because they just kissed a few episodes ago. So, and he broke up with Tess, so now he's free. Why the heck are they not trying to figure out what's going on between the two of them versus her accepting a date with Grant? So to me, the way they're showing it is it looks like Carter's way more invested in a relationship than she is, and it's making me not like her, actually.
Well, I think that, you know, she's there. If you want to do a little bit of fan wanking, she's got the issues going on with her son and the fact that for at least the first couple episodes in this season, they were really at odds on whether they should try to go back and correct everything. And she's very invested in having a normal son now, and she didn't want that to happen. And she's still trying to really get together with her son and really understand this new person.
Right.
Because they don't know each other at all. And I think that she's got all of those issues going on, and she's just trying to sort out how things are in her own life before she starts involving Carter
by that logic, then she shouldn't be dating anybody.
This is true, but then we've also got Grant, who's very, very forceful. He doesn't quit. You know, he's one of these old fashioned guys who's going to go out there and, you know, hit the woman over the head with the club and drag her back by her hair kind of psychology, because, you know, he's an old fashioned man. And he's just going to pursue her and pursue her and pursue her until she says yes. And I think his whole function is really to be a spoiler. So she kind of goes off a little bit in his direction for a while until she comes to her senses and realizes it's been Carter all along.
Yes. And I understand what you're saying, but it made me, when she accepted the date, I was like, she doesn't like Carter then. You know, I mean, it's not that I don't really believe that she doesn't like him at all, but it made me think that they weren't on the same page.
Well, I don't think they are on the same page. I think that's part of it. I think that she's not quite gotten herself to where she needs to be to pursue that. And I think that she needs to sort that out before she can go back to Carter.
I think that's part of it.
And also remember, you know, she just agreed to go out for a drink with Grant. Whereas, she, you know, she'd be committing to something a lot stronger with Carter. Whereas with Grant, it's just drinks at this point.
That's true. I mean, because they've known each other for so long that if they actually started going out, they would be serious instantly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's true. That is true.
And I don't think she's there. I don't think she's at a point where she wants to do that quite yet.
I did like the fact that Joe told him, you know, get off your butt and do something about it. You know, instead of whining. Because basically the whole episode, she likes Grant now. I don't like that guy. You know, so he was just really just whining for the whole episode. And she's just kind of like, well, if you don't like it, get off your butt and go do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And she's totally right.
Yeah. I mean, because I think he had like three different conversations where he's going, Grant sucks. Why does Allison like him? It's like, what are we in high school, you know? So, yeah, there is that. I do kind of like where they're flirting with Zane and Joe. Like, where that's going is kind of mm-hmm. interesting. And the actual story... Oh, you know what, though? My favorite is Henry and his wife. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
That was the best relationship thing going on in the episode.
Well, you know, because they have the most adult relationship. You know, they're support, well, I mean, from his perspective, he doesn't really know her any more than anybody else is,
right,
know, knowing the new people in their lives. But he feels an attraction to her. There was a reason that he married her in this reality,
right,
in the first place. And you can see that come out so much in their scenes together.
Right.
They're just...
Their chemistry is fantastic.
Their chemistry is wonderful. I love them.
Yeah, their chemistry was instant, and I was like, I absolutely believe that they're married.
Mm-hmm.
And which is amazing to introduce a brand new character to a show with a character that you've known for three seasons. She's already married to him, and you believe it.
Yeah.
Like, that's unbelievable that they managed to pull that off. But the story for this week's episode was, you know, it was a little cheesy fun, and you're just like, whatever, and... We got to watch James Callis roll around and moan and groan and be in a lot of pain and smoke.
And there's nothing wrong with that necessarily, yeah, except that, you know, doing it shirtless would have been better. I mean, that's my personal opinion.
Well, I mean...
If the episode fails in any way, I think that's pretty much where it does.
Well, I mean, they also had him smoking, doing the I am smoking to be debonair thing. Which only, not that many actors can pull that off anymore.
No.
But he did the whole classic 40s, I'm cool because I'm smoking. You know, he really, he totally pulled that off. And they kept telling him why he needed to quit smoking. First of all, he can't smoke anywhere anymore. He's like, he can't smoke at work. He can't smoke at the cafeteria. He can literally only smoke. And then he was like working at the garage. He couldn't smoke in there
because
Henry has asthma. And he's just like, good Lord. So he was like, I guess I have to quit.
We live in a very hostile society towards smokers, which is fine by me personally. But yeah, for him, that kind of sucks.
Yeah, he couldn't. It was pretty funny just to hear him gripe about it. And then apparently now he likes the 70s, which is really bizarre.
That was the one thing that struck me as a false note. Because when you grow up with a certain kind of music, to suddenly hear something that is radically different from that, most people don't embrace that difference.
Right. You know, especially they don't like it.
If they're in their teens or 20s, then yeah, maybe, because they're still in that age where they're going to go for different things. But he's in his 40s at this point. He'd have a set idea of what he likes. Right. And that seems so different from what he's been listening to.
Yeah, he's been listening to big band music. His whole life. And so then he hears Car Wash and he's like, yeah. And I was like, okay. And then the dance, I was like, where did he learn how to dance the new dances? It's like, he's been watching crazy music videos on VH1 or something. And he's doing the whole shoulder rock. And I was like, all right. And then he's trying
old out the YouTube new videos of American Bandstand.
And he's trying out the new lingo, which is pretty bizarre.
That was so bizarre.
Yeah. But I do like his character. I really like where they're going with his character and how he's not fitting in, really, because he doesn't really know. I mean, he knows he likes Allison, and that's all he's kind of focused on right now. He hasn't really stopped to focus on anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But they pretty much cut him off. Now they've removed those particles. It's like he could never go back to his time.
Well, he couldn't really before that because he knows too much about this time. And it would be...
Yeah, but the thing that his frustration is now his destiny to have a Nobel Prize and be known as a great scientist is gone.
Completely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's the thing, too. The one thing that I would like to see more, when he talks about the past, it's not even just things like the Nobel that he won't win, and because from his perspective, he hasn't won it yet, so really, you know, he hasn't lost anything. But they never really address the fact that, you know, the people who he left behind, they were his friends. They were his family.
Well, he actually talked about it this week.
Well, he did, but only, you know, he said, well, yeah, I left behind my friends, but, you know, you're my friends now. You're my family now. And that just seemed too neat and clean to me.
Well, maybe that's what he's trying to say right now to convince himself.
Yeah, well, I would like to see them get more into that later on. I really would, because that seems like a huge thing to know that within the space of a moment, really, from his perspective, everyone he knew
is dead.
Is dead.
Right.
You know, they're extremely old and in a home.
The other thing I was thinking is his science that he's an expert on is from the 40s. Mm-hmm. Now he's in 2010. There's no way he's still an expert in science.
No.
It's not possible.
It's moved on too much. If there's one thing that has accelerated just hugely over the intervening decades, it's been technology.
So I don't understand how he's even hanging with these guys in their conversation. No, when they're talking about stuff, I was like, and they're like, oh, we put these nanobots in to do blah, blah. His first question should have been like, what the heck is a nanobot?
Mm-hmm. Because everything he knows is analog.
Right.
I mean, he knows there's certain theories about physics and things like that he'd certainly know. But from the technology perspective, he would be completely at sea. Nothing was digital. They didn't have computers. The only computer that existed in his time was the size of a building and, you know, was I think it was able to do simple math problems, and they had to change, you know, vacuform tubes every 2 seconds because it kept overheating. And they had an army of people doing that. And that was the extent of computer technology in his time. So the fact that you could just, you know, hand him like a little BlackBerry or something like that and say, well, this is more computing power than existed on your planet, you know, in your day. How do you wrap your mind around that?
Well, and they haven't explored that. Like, that actually, more than the family thing that you're talking about, because I didn't know any of his family, so I don't really care.
Well, no, truthfully. But I mean, that's his emotional investment.
Right, but to me, what matters is how the heck is he hanging out with these Eureka scientists?
Mm-hmm.
How is he doing experiments with them? Like, I understood how he was doing an experiment with Henry, because it was based on something he built.
Right.
So that totally makes sense. But the very next thing we see him work on, he should be struggling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he should really be struggling. And that's what I want to see.
Yeah.
All right.
I agree.
Next show we're going to talk about is Pillars of Earth, which is a new show that is out by Starz. And I have to say that so far from Starz, I have seen Spartacus, which I gave an A to. I freaking love that show. And now Pillars of Earth is the next show that I've seen.
Pillars of the Earth, actually. Excuse me. I have to be.
Pillars of the Earth is the next show that I've seen from them, and it blew me away from day one.
That's fantastic.
Oh, my goodness.
I think I just saw a commercial for it, actually, on Encore, which I do get, but I don't get Stars.
Well, I don't get Stars either, but it's on Netflix Instant. Uh-huh. And so anything that's on Stars is on Netflix the same day.
Yeah, so worth getting. It's just a wonderful, it's a brilliant show.
Oh, yeah. The British, I have to give them credit, they do period pieces very well. Mm-hmm. And this is pretty much a period piece, and it's an interesting point in history that I'm really not that aware of.
Well, they don't cover it very often. The anarchy is kind of one of those periods that it's almost like an orphan period of history. People tend to gloss right over it and move on pretty much to the period that immediately follows it with Henry II. And it's like the anarchy didn't happen.
Right.
So it's really nice to see this stretch actually given some attention and covered, because it's interesting.
It's really interesting, and I like the some of it feels like it's accurate and true, but of course when you get to the whole visions and people, I was like, what? Why do we have to be mystical now?
Yeah, the ghost kind of came out of nowhere. It's like,
well, I can see someone being haunted by a ghost or someone they killed. That's totally fine. What I didn't like was the ghost apparently knew the future and was telling him prophecies, and I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Like, that I thought was, I wanted to call BS on, because the show up to that point had been very realistic.
Yes.
Everything had been very historical. You felt like you were learning history, and then all of a sudden you have this mystical ghost that's telling you a prophecy of the future, and that happens in the very next episode. Mm-hmm. I was like,
I mean, I could have accepted the ghost if it had just been a bad dream of his.
Right.
And I, you know, because part of it was like, well, why would the guy you killed tell you all this useful information?
Yeah, he basically was like, but ironically though,
I wouldn't do that.
Ironically though, the ghost gave him all this useful information that was only useful at the time. All of it happened at once. Mm-hmm. So he actually didn't have time to do anything about it. So it's like,
except that, you know, he's got a vendetta against the kid. And, I mean,
well, I haven't seen the next episode.
Well, but even then, he said, you know, there's the redheaded boy who's going to depose one king and crown another.
But he doesn't know if that's him or
and,
the other
well,
guy.
Well, but he got a really good idea because he saw him just as he started to go into his epileptic fit. So you could tell he recognized him. In fact, that's really what threw him over the edge, was seeing Jack and realizing that's the one who's going to undo me. And so he can immediately, I know you haven't seen the most recent episode, but you knew from just the moment that he saw Jack that he was going to try to do something about that, because he's been told by a ghost that he believes that this kid is going to ruin him. So,
well, I think he didn't say it was going to ruin him. It said it will depose a king and crown another. Though technically he's already crowned, so I guess he can only be deposed.
There's a limited number of choices.
Yeah, that is true. But that family does not have good luck, because his mother is accused of being a witch, which she's like, yeah, I'm kind of a witch. it was like, oh, you're being falsely accused of being a witch. She's like, yeah, not entirely falsely. Which I actually thought was
what you say. Actually, it's not the right response.
First I've ever heard that anywhere.
That was actually pretty good, because it was like the church, they didn't... she's hanging out at this monastery where they're building a new church, and all the guys, all the monks, are staring at her because she's a pretty woman. And so they're trying to figure out what to do with her, and the son of the guy she's actually dating doesn't like her because his mom recently died, and he's like, she's bewitched my dad. It's not been long enough from my mom, so she must have put him under a spell. And so she's...
I have to say, they went into their relationship
quickly,
really fast after mom died.
Yeah, her body was barely cold, you know?
It's like, just put her in the ground and, you know, he's on to the first woman.
Well,
so I can understand, even though they're portraying the son as
some time had actually gone by, though, because you have to remember, they walked from, like, one town, they show the map, they, like, walked from one town to the next, before anything happened, so they had been walking for, like, months. So it hadn't been, like, days.
Well, I don't know how long it could have been, because remember, you have to look at the baby as being a mark of how much time has
That's
passed.
True. The baby
and
was pretty
this
small.
Kid was still really tiny
in
swaddling
right.
clothes when they got to the
You're
church.
Right, it hasn't been okay.
It hasn't been that long, maybe a few weeks.
He did totally jump into the bed with the next one.
I could understand where the son would be really pissed off about that. You know?
Yeah,
I
mean, and that is legitimate, but getting her burned at the stake is a little extreme.
That is a touch over the line.
Because, I mean, I could see him being upset. True. And I could see him having a fight with his father. Totally cool. I could see all of that. But I think your dad would be mad if you got his new girlfriend burned at the stake. So the kid was like, oh, she's a witch. She bewitched my dad. I'll testify to it. And so the father's like, oh, my son's like flipped out and he's testifying against you. You need to run because they're accusing you of being a witch. It's totally crazy. And she's like, well, not entirely crazy. And he's like, what? She's like, I'm a little bit of a witch. And he was going, what do you mean? She's like, a little bit. So the thing is,
she's convinced that she has some kind of strange powers because she cursed you know, the men who convicted her and who condemned her and the man that she loved and started coming true.
Right.
So she believes that, you know, she plugged into something and there is something.
Yeah,
there is some power.
They killed her husband.
They weren't married.
They killed the man that she loved and she cursed the guys who did it and the curse is like happening. So she's like, yeah, I guess I'm a witch. But I mean, she didn't practice or anything. She didn't do anything, but she's like, all right. Though when she had that chance to stab that monk or the bishop, and she had the knife was like this big. Why did she stab him in his shoulder? She had a choice. Because he's stunned. He's standing there because she literally pees on the table, which is like, whoa. And so he's stunned and he's just standing there like, well, because the whole things are all, you know, Catholic priests or whatever.
Yeah, they're monks.
They're monks.
They haven't been around a woman
in forever.
You know.
So she literally lifts her skirt up and he's like, because he's sitting in the chair and she's standing on the table. So he's like face to face with her nether regions, and then she literally just pees right in front of him, and he's just like, oh my god, like his jaw is on the ground, and so he's stunned, and she takes this knife, and she could have killed
him. Perfect opportunity.
She wanted him dead, and instead of actually stabbing him anywhere vital, she stabs him in the shoulder and then walks off. And I was like, really? You totally wasted that knife.
Can we chalk it up to lack of knowledge about human anatomy at that point, or?
I don't know.
Actually, no. They showed, and one of the reasons
that, she's
that
a doctor.
The wife thought that she was a witch was because she saw books with drawings of anatomy.
Oh.
Yeah.
That she had.
She had studied medicine, so it's like, no. She just decided not, because I think her thing is, she thinks that her curse is going to come true, so. The curse she gave him was not to be killed by her by a knife. Her curse was that you will be raised to a certain level, and just when you think you've hit it, you will fall. That was her curse to him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's been rising up in the ranks, and so she wants him to hit his downfall. So instead of killing him, she just stabs him in the chest or in his arm or whatever. I was like... And the only thing is, the actor is fantastic. I love that actor.
Oh, I love Ian McShane.
Yeah,
that was one of the main reasons that I tuned in to watch this because, you know, Ian McShane, I'm there.
Yeah.
He is fantastic villain. I love to hate him. I hate him so much on that show. But, I mean, I love him too because he's great. I mean, every scene he's in, he totally takes the cake. And so I'd say my favorite character, of course, is the builder who you're supposed to like. He's, he's my favorite.
And it's hard not to like Rufus Sewell. It really is.
He's gorgeous.
He is stunning. Oh my God.
But, the other good looking guy is actually the other monk, which is weird because I'm used to seeing him on MI5.
Is he on MI5?
He was on the original. Yeah, he was the original MI5 main guy from season one. So I'm used to seeing him on that, and so he's like a monk now, so I was like, oh, we're not supposed to find you attractive. Okay.
See, the only thing I remember seeing him in was Frost Nixon, where he plays a British TV producer.
Ah.
Frost's TV producer. And he's got this long blonde wig on and these big glasses, and he looks so different from the way he is.
Yeah.
Very, very, very aggressively 70s, yes. But seeing him as Prior Philip is very different.
Well,
I love his character.
He's I really like they're doing two-prong thing where they're basically showing the corruption of the church and the corruption of the monarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're showing it through the eyes of the Church and the Monarchy, but they're also telling the side story with the Builder, which I actually think is actually the more interesting story, because I really care about what's going on with the Builder than I care about the Monarchy. So I'm like, whatever, the Monarchy, they're all evil, so it's if they all kill each other, whatever.
Yeah, my understanding is, I'm not going to read the book until this is over because I don't want to be spoiled for anything.
Right.
But it's my understanding that the book goes into much more detail about Tom Builder and the building of the cathedral, and there's a lot of focus on that part of it. In fact, the bits with the Monarchy and the Church are kind of peripheral, actually.
Right.
The focus is very different. So you really get a lot of that. So if you do get around to reading the book, that's where the main focus is.
I think I would enjoy that because, of course, I mean, it makes sense. That's why his story is stronger, and that's why it's more interesting to see his scenes, because I was like, I love this guy. I really want to see what happens next. All right, so if you guys are... Oh, you wanted to give a real quick plug to Being Human. Go ahead.
Yeah, Being Human's been on now for, I think, it's fourth week.
And this is season three.
This is... No, season two. Season three.
I've already seen season two.
Season three, they are just starting to shoot now, I think. It has not...
Oh, I thought you were saying that...
No, season two. Season...
Oh. Well, then never mind. Yes, I'm caught up on Being Human, because I've already seen season two.
Oh, okay. Well, I think... I'm trying to remember what the last episode was, and it's blurring together now because I got kind of tired of watching it on BBC America and how they censor all the scenes and all the commercials and everything else. And I just downloaded the entire season and watched it at once.
Okay, so season two, the main theme of season two is that there's this secret organization that's hunting supernaturals. So I think in the second episode, the big cliffhanger is that the main guy, the secret organization, finds the girl who's the werewolf and convinces her to join his experiment.
Right. He comes across her and she becomes... I think that the episode that they just recently aired last week was the one where they finally... The vampires are now following Mitchell.
Right, because they had no order. Because Mitchell killed, at the end of season one, Mitchell kills the leader,
Herrick,
the leader of the vampires, and he watches them stumble about for a couple of episodes and realizes that without a leader, it turns into chaos and people just start getting killed and it's all bad. So he's like, all right, fine, I'll be the leader.
Yeah, and I think that the most recent episode that they showed, that they're showing on BBC America, is the one where he comes into what's left of their base.
Yeah.
And he's just announced that he's pretty much in charge, and this is what he wants them to do. And if anybody kills anyone else,
he's going
to
kill
them. He's going to get to them.
Yeah, so, I mean, I have to say, of the three supernaturals, you have your ghost, your werewolf, and your vampire. Mitchell is the prettiest, but I think the least interesting. I don't really find Mitchell that interesting.
Well, I like him a lot. The only... I have a few problems, actually, as the season progresses, and I can't go into them because they've yet to happen, you know, for the people who are watching here in the States. But I think they start getting very inconsistent with the characterizations as the season goes along. It starts getting really intense and really interesting in some ways, and in other ways, if you look at it too closely, you realize... Wait a minute, this is contradicting things that they set up in the first season. And, you know, and I think ultimately where they go with it is kind of...
Well, I think my other problem is I really believe that George and Annie, I really believe, are good people. You know, they are in bad circumstances. Bad things happen to them. They're doing the best that they can, but they're genuinely good people. I don't believe Mitchell is necessarily a good person. I think Mitchell gives a lot of lip to wanting to be a good person, but I don't actually think he is.
Well, and, you know, there was a time where I would have disagreed with you, and then I saw where the whole season, where this is going, and they
but even
unfortunately...
No,
beforehand I would have believed, okay, he was really, you know, becoming a vampire is supposed to do something to you psychologically
right.
that just short-circuits everything that was good about you. And I think for a long time he just gave in to that, and then he reached a point where, no, he really wanted his humanity back, but trying to do that is an effort. However, they later on in the season go somewhere that is so dark with him
that I just kind of, I mean, I remember watching it and thinking, oh, you're not going to go there. You're not going to go. You went there. Damn. And I can't look at Mitchell the same way anymore.
Well, I think even in the first season, when he dates that girl from the hospital where they all work at the same hospital.
Yes.
And he dates the girl from the hospital and freaking kills her.
Yeah.
And then goes, oh yeah, oops.
Oopsie.
I was like, and then he goes and tells George, yeah, remember our friend that we had lunch with and I went out with her? I kind of ate her. That's okay, right? And George is like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, George was so upset about that. And Mitchell, I didn't think, showed enough remorse. I didn't believe that, like, he knew what was going to happen when he dated her.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you do that? And so that's my problem with Mitchell. And that was in season one. So that's not even where they're going now.
See, I was able to kind of forgive him for that because he is so messed up that, you know, I felt like, well, he's trying, but then he backslides, and
you don't eat your friends on a backslide.
That's a big backslide. But what he ends up ultimately doing at the end of this season really made me say I can't like him anymore. I can't excuse him anymore.
I couldn't excuse him for that because the girl that he killed was George's friend,
mm-hmm.
and George introduced him to her. So, no, I don't forgive you for that. That was, I didn't forgive him in season one. And I think that he talks a lot about how he wants to be a better person, but he never shows it to me. I never believe that he puts enough effort into it. So, and I mean, George, I think, does slide a little bit because he struggles with the whole werewolf thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he genuinely feels remorse if he ever hurts anyone. He is really upset about that.
Well, he goes to a huge effort to avoid doing that to anybody. I think in a way he's got an advantage in that he's never killed someone or had his condition only attacks him once a month. So
right.
That the
I was
going to
say he
time,
has killed people.
He can be himself.
Right.
But the only one he killed was. You know, the only one he actually deliberately went after and killed was Herrick.
Yeah, he deliberately killed Herrick. That's true.
And,
but...
and Herrick really deserved it. I mean, Herrick was trying to kill all of them.
Right.
So,
he turned his girlfriend, which he really.
But he didn't mean to do that. He was pushing
her away.
Well,
I didn't
say
he did anything on purpose.
Yeah, but I mean, he was. It wasn't like he went crazy and attacked her. He was pushing her away and scratched her. He didn't even know he did it when he did it.
Right.
So.
I'm not saying that he did it on purpose, but I'm saying whenever he actually hurt somebody, he really feels remorse.
Oh,
he really
yeah.
feels guilty. He really doesn't want to hurt anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so for that reason alone, I love George. Okay? George can pretty much do no wrong in my eyes. And Annie, of course, just super sweet.
Well, she's harmless.
Yeah.
She's...
Well, she's not entirely harmless.
Well, at the end of season one, they give her a bunch of powers, but season two,
they pretty much take them away. Right.
And so she is pretty much harmless.
Yeah.
There's very little damage she can do.
All right, but she actually, the thing is she's different from the other ghosts, and they can't figure out why.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing, but
they still haven't really answered that.
Right.
Even
so... We'll talk about... I thought you were talking about a new season as him being human, and I was all excited.
No, they're just starting to shoot that now.
Man, you were like, oh, being human started already. And I was like, great! And
well,
the thing
yeah,
I hate
season,
about...
Season two!
The thing I hate about being human, because it's the only thing I hate, is that the seasons are only like six episodes. And then you're... That's
it's eight, actually. Season
the first
was
season
eight,
was six.
Was six. This one's
second
eight.
Season was eight. But I'm like, come on, that's not a season.
It isn't. Britain, apparently.
Oh my goodness, it's too short. All right.
I mean, if you want to talk about short seasons, the newest thing from Stephen Moffat, Sherlock, is three episodes. So
that's a mini series.
Short.
Yeah.
That's a mini series. That's not a season.
But you know what? They're calling it a season. Well, they're calling it a series. That's their word for season. And I'm thinking, no, it's not. That's
it's
just a really long movie.
It's a mini series, yeah.
But I mean, each episode is like about an hour and a half to 2 hours long, but still, I mean. Three episodes? It's
like
three brilliant episodes. Well, actually, I haven't seen the last one that airs today, so I'll be looking at that later. But they've got the first two episodes, which have only aired in England, are just amazing. They're brilliant. Some of the best TV I've seen in ages. And I understand that they're going to be bringing it to Masterpiece Theater in October. So worth watching. So worth watching.
And on that note, I'm going to have to bring this podcast to a close because we have rambled on. I think this is a record. We have gone on way too long. But if you have any feedback about the show, please let me know. Give it to us at tvcampfire@gmail.com. And we'll see you guys next week.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.